This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik. My guest today, consultant orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Rajesh Singh, joining us on Zoom. How are you today, Dr. Rajesh?
Very well, Xiao Ik. Thank you.
And so today we want to talk about the Tokyo 2020 Olympics. All eyes are on the games, of course, and how the world's top athletes are performing amid a global pandemic. And, you know, really bringing some good news to us every now and then, including this very heartwarming story, which I'm sure many of you read about, you know, Qatar and Italy's high jumpers choosing to share the gold medal, you know, when they both made the same clearance, they performed with the same achievement, and they chose to share the medal, you know. And it's things like this that I think we're looking forward to hearing amid these very difficult times. But of course, with these kinds of games, with this high intensity, you get injuries. And so what's the process of diagnosing and managing these athletes' injuries as quickly as possible? Because, you know, all eyes are on whether they can get back to performing and getting those goals. So together with Dr. Rajesh, I'd like to explore the role of medical imaging in managing these injuries. So if you have any questions, do call us 03-7733-2900. WhatsApp 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, Dr. Rajesh, Olympic athletes, they're really the elite. They've trained their entire career to get to this point. They're at the peak of their physical condition. So would injuries, when they are performing in the Olympics, be less likely to occur given that, you know, they have conditioned their bodies to perform at the optimal level, or more likely to occur?
Okay, so it's an interesting question, Shawek. I think the way to look at the issue is to say, how well did they train for that particular thing that they're doing? So as I always like to use the phrase wear, tear, repair. By the time somebody comes to the Olympics, they're at a very high wear, tear, repair cycle. So you imagine a car going slowly and something throwing the car off track, whereas a car going very fast and then the car being turned off track. That sort of gives you a sense of, and I don't mean sort of physically, you know, the athlete sort of traveling very fast. I mean, just philosophically, think about the skeletal system. The skeletal system's in a state of very high turnover. So you've got lots of tissue breakdown, you've got lots of tissue buildup. And so when you talk about injury, in high-performing athletes, generally we tend to see catastrophic injuries when they do occur. So things like an Achilles tendon rupture, joint dislocation, a broken bone, something pretty catastrophic. And the reason why it tends to be catastrophic is because they're already at the limit of their wear, tear, repair cycle. So one of the things that I said, and you know, this repair thing is something which you would sort of think cannot be speeded up beyond a certain level. You know, the joke has always been, it takes 9 months for a woman to make a baby. Nine women can't make a baby in a month, mm-hmm. right? Just when you talk about biological systems. But when you talk about the skeletal system and repair, I've seen injuries in high-performance athletes that repair overnight, which in you and I would take in the order of, you know, I'd say at least 2 to 3 weeks to repair. And that sort of, you know, that sort of acceleration and that rate of accelerated repair is really the only mechanism which will explain why is it that they can push their bodies to such a level, and then the next day the body just recovers and then keeps going.
And so that would explain, I guess, why you do read of athletes having these catastrophic injuries and they still go on to complete the race. You know, it seems beyond a human feat almost.
No, that comes from the heart, not the muscle. Although the heart is a muscle. You know, I've seen...
That's the will.
That's the will. Mm-hmm. That's that... you should see them after they complete the race. You know, they're sort of catatonic on the floor and they have to be carried off in the stretcher. But they've just got that sort of will that really pushes them to complete the race. And, you know, that's the sort of will that you need to be an athlete performing at the level that you're performing at when you get to the Olympics.
What are some of the most common injuries? And I guess you would get a wide range because of the different kinds of sporting events that are done.
I think largely the injuries I would sort of put into the anticipated and unanticipated. That's sort of usually what I would do if I look at an athlete with a particular injury. So say, for example, basketball, they get jammed fingers all the time. If you're talking about swimming, they tend to have trouble with the shoulder. If you're talking about golf, they tend to have trouble with the low back and the elbow. So there's the common anticipated, I wouldn't call them injuries, I'd call them issues. So the common anticipated issues where you know that this is going to happen because of the sport. And then there are things which are unanticipated or uncommon either because there's something underlying going on. So one of the very, very common things that is sort of present in a lot of athletes is torn ankle ligaments. So lots of athletes have ankle ligaments that are torn, and it's something that they've had, you know, for decades, it's been known. And then when they come to perform at a certain level, if they get even a minor injury on the field, as it were, that sort of old or pre-existing injury shows itself. And so when you don't want to talk about sort of sports and imaging, one of the sort of questions that's been asked is, should you image everybody before they enter into a sport to say to them, well, you know, these are the pre-existing injuries that you have, and these are the accommodations that you need to make to your training? I'm not really in support of the idea, because that makes the deficit the disease. So deficit means something you don't have. Disease means how are you disabled by the thing that you don't have. So the example I always like to use, if somebody is short, they can still play basketball. They have to be able to jump higher and stronger than somebody who's tall, who can do it with relative ease, but it doesn't mean they can't play. So you wouldn't want to sort of have that filter and say, well, if you don't meet this height requirement, you can't play basketball. You know, you can play basketball, it's your performance. If you can jump higher and stronger than everybody else, then go ahead and play basketball.
Is that practiced by certain teams or countries, perhaps, to image every athlete before they go out?
Not to my knowledge. The imaging controversy has come around aging. So lots of athletes are classified according to age. So, you know, like below 15s, below 13s, et cetera, et cetera. So one of the controversial uses of medical imaging technologies is to look at whether somebody is skeletally mature or not, because we have criteria medically that says you have stopped growing, and we have criteria medically that says you are off. You know, on a population basis, we know what the information is in terms of if this bone feature is there on an image, then you must be this old or that old. So these are called ossific centers and physial plates. So one of the controversies has been in soccer to look at whether we're willing to x-ray sort of athletes who claim to be a certain age to see whether they're actually that age or whether they're older or not. Yeah, I know. Wow. And so because when you get to high level competitive sports, the stakes are immense, right? So I mean, just look at the dollars poured into the game, and you know, the sort of social glory that goes with it. So the stakes are absolutely immense. So when the stakes are so high, you know, I wouldn't say people do things, but lots of questions come up as to what people's motivations are. So those are sort of, you know, some of the more controversial aspects of medical imaging in athletes and in athletics.
And speaking of stakes, you know, when a new event gets introduced in the Olympics, also high stakes for those who train within that particular sport. So Tokyo saw the introduction of, I think, skateboarding and rock climbing. So bound to have different kinds of injuries there, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, so I would say more of the same. you're not going to invent a new injury by climbing for the Olympics, but you are going to exacerbate common injuries. So say, for example, in climbers, one of the very sort of common things that all climbers know is what's called a climber's finger. That's where they rupture this thing called a pulley in the finger. But unfortunately, that's the only thing they know. So I'll come in, every climber has a climber's finger until proven otherwise. But one of the very common things that I see in climbing is actually nerve entrapments in the upper limb. Because if you think about it, they're using their upper limbs in a way which is not sort of socially usual because they're using it to climb and hoist themselves up. And they're also using certain groups of muscles. Now, if you use the group of muscle wrongly, you can actually overdevelop certain groups of muscles that cause nerve compressions. So the one of the surprising things that I'm seeing, at least in terms of imaging athletes who are climbing, is I'm seeing nerve compressions. And one was a classic guy, actually. He teaches in a French, he's a rock climbing instructor in an international school, and he competes at a very high level. And I think he was somewhere in Japan once. That's what I remember, because he was in Japan once. And he said, my right arm just went limp. I couldn't use my arm for 2 weeks. But then, you know, I went home, I massaged it, I exercised it, and then I can use it again, but I can't use it so well. So I said to him, you know, you're a high-level climber. Didn't you think that something was bad or wrong? He said to me, well, I kind of knew that something was wrong, but I didn't think anything was bad because I didn't feel pain. It just suddenly the thing cannot use it already. So, which, I mean, it's easy to laugh at when you have the knowledge. But when you don't have this sort of sense of what it should be like, you just take it as any other social kind of event. You know, yeah, I'm using the thing, but things stop working, and let me sleep for a while and see if it stops working again or not. And it was remarkable because despite his weakness in his ulnar nerve, he was still able to climb professionally and teach professionally, despite having a couple of fingers that don't really work well. You know, so he's really able to compensate and adapt until the problem started happening on the other side. And then he went, oh, two hands cannot use properly, got a problem, I better go see somebody. And he was quite surprised to learn that he didn't have climber's fingers. So his thing was, oh, I've got a climber's finger, it'll get better by itself. He didn't really entertain other conditions or diagnoses. And I think that that's probably one of the things where medical imaging in athletes and sports is really, really helpful, because we can tell you what coexists. So it's not just one problem, but it may be a few problems, and we can tell you what coexists, and we can tell you what various contributions of each component of the problem are.
So we'll come back and discuss more about that, you know, the role of medical imaging in high-level competitions like the Olympics. I've got some statistics that I found, which will give you an idea of what kind of capacity, you know, or what kind of resources are being put into this, and how does this kind of imaging help the medical teams then to deal with athletes when an injury occurs. I'm speaking to consultant orthopedic surgeon Dr. Rajesh Singh. We're looking at the role of medical imaging in something like the Tokyo Olympics in helping athletes to manage their injuries. Call us 03-7733-2900 if you have questions, or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. We'll be right back. BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Shao-Ik, and my guest, consultant orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Rajesh Singh. We're going behind the scenes of the Tokyo Olympics today. Well, not really being able to see behind the scenes, but we're looking at what is the role of medical imaging when it comes to the injuries experienced by athletes, how it can help to sort of, you know, help the teams, the sports medical teams decide what to do, how to manage the injuries. The idea is to get the athletes back onto the field or onto their sporting event, if at all possible. So we're going to, I want to share some statistics to give you an idea of how vast it really is. But before that, do call us if you have any questions, 03-7733-2900 or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. So in, now I have these numbers from the 2016 Rio Olympics. There were more than 1,500 imaging procedures carried out in total throughout the games. In terms of the team that they had to do the imaging procedures, they had 56 radiologists and 42 radiographers or technicians. So Dr. Rajesh, the role of medical imaging in something like the Olympics, can you put it into context for us?
Okay, it's a big undertaking, just like anything else in a huge gathering like that. So, you know, if you had to feed those number of people, imagine the kitchens you would have to have. If you had to house them, you know, the number of accommodations. If you had to transport them, the number of, you know, buses, trains, whatever that you would need. So you know, I think that part of it is you're catering to a large number of people, and you're catering to a large number of people with a very specific need. So I think there's a few ways you can look at it, but I want to look at it in terms of what's critical, and then what's common and what's classical, all right? So what's critical is really head injury and neck injury. So I think one of the big roles for imaging in sort of the management of high performance, high stakes games is to say, am I missing something important? So, you know, somebody has a head-to-head collision on the field, they both get up, they both have a headache, they both say, I want to keep playing. Great. Okay, that's what you could expect. Then the next question is it safe for them to keep playing? So, of course, you can do a neurological examination on the field, and you know, the more experienced you are, the more of these things you do, the more sense you get of, is this right or is this wrong? The problem is that games officials and athletes are very loath to accept things on, in my experience, because your experience may cost them a medal, it may cost the team a medal, it may cost them a lot of, you know, national pride or shame or money. So imaging is useful to get something objective. And so if somebody has a head injury and, you know, you can do a sophisticated brain scan and you can say, look, there's no structural injury to the brain, there's no bleeding, you know, you haven't broken anything. Similarly with the neck, the player has a lot of confidence going back to play because they know that they've sort of, they haven't had a structural injury. They may have something functional, but they haven't had anything structural. Mm. And certainly for sort of officials as well, it makes it a lot easier for them to be able to clear somebody to say, okay, like, you know, you're good to be able to play now, and I can do this in full conscience that I'm not sending you sort of to be killed or something like that. And I would say that's sort of the critical. And, you know, clearly then you've got the next one, which is the common, you know, that poor BMX girl from Japan, I think, you know, first time in the Olympics, 5 minutes on, broke her clavicle. That's pretty straightforward. You know, you've broken a bone. That's common. X-ray gives you an idea of sort of the start of the whole treatment process. Hmm. The other common ones would be fractures, dislocation. So that means, you know, people contact each other, something hurts, you suspect it's broken. You want to see, is it broken? How badly broken is it? What sort of the immediate urgent treatment that you need to be able to do. The same for, so that's for X-rays. For MRIs, you're basically looking at muscle injuries, muscle tendon injuries, you know, sort of subtle tears. For ultrasound, by the sort of, you know, ultrasound's probably the simplest thing you can deploy because you can do it on the field. So while literally on the field side, whereas X-ray, you know, at least have got to get off the field. MRI, even if it's field MRI or a CT scan, even if it's portable, you sort of go out of game. Whereas with a musculoskeletal ultrasound, you can do it, you know, on the field itself. In a sporting event like the Olympics, you'd probably use the ultrasound to look at screening. So I was speaking to a colleague of mine, he's a radiologist, and he was present during the 2000 Sydney Olympics. And he is one of the faculty who teaches musculoskeletal ultrasound in the same circuit that I do. And so I said to him, you know, what did you use it for? And he said, largely it was to screen out the fakers. So, you know, that sort of the tarjuns, right?
The divers,
yeah. So it is basically to sort of screen out, you know, clearly the ball hit him 3 minutes ago and now he's rolling on the floor. Obviously, there's nothing wrong. But, you know, what if there is? So a lot of the initial musculoskeletal scans were basically TROs, two rule outs, this, that, or the other. And also sort of as a screening tool to say, well, look, you know, there's some fluid in the knee. I can't see anything else that's going on. But, you know, fluid in the knee less than 5 minutes after contact means that there's probably blood. That's an indication for us to go off and have an MRI. So the musculoskeletal ultrasound on the field in those circumstances are used largely as a screening tool or even a monitoring tool. Mm-hmm. Me personally, I've used it courtside for high stakes games where you know, an athlete may injure a tendon, for example, right? And I can scan it and say, well, look, you know, it's not broken, it's just contused or sprained, but it's really painful, and they want to keep playing. So then, you know, you've got the option of sticking a needle in and giving them some local anesthetic just to numb the pain on the structure so that they can keep playing. I probably wouldn't do it in every circumstance, you know, sort of probably very few circumstances in which I've done that. But the circumstances in which I've done them, I've had complete confidence in both the player and the coach to exercise common sense, right? Because they say, look, this structure is clearly not torn. It's just contused or bruised, but it's painful enough to affect your game. So if it's within game rules, I'll give you an injection into the tendon just to numb it for the 6 hours. You only need it to be numb for, you know, or you just need to numb the pain for an hour or so while you complete the game. But I'd really have to have complete confidence in the coach and the athlete that they're not going to rip apart, spoil or tear that particular thing that I've sort of tried to put a Band-Aid over while they're playing.
Yeah, and you know, in this current games as well, I was reading a tweet by a radiologist from Canada who was saying that you know, they are doing things, field ultrasound. I think the handball games was something that he cited. You mentioned classical injuries as well.
Okay, so classical injuries would be rolled ankles, so lateral ligament tears. You know, any of the running contact sports. So, you know, you've got soccer, volleyball, beach volleyball, hockey, anything where people are running and turning. You know, lateral ankle ligament injuries are very, very, very common. The question is just how many are you going to see in a day? You know, long distance running, you don't see it. So I was on standby again for the Sydney Olympics when they had the marathons. I was there. I was one of the volunteers in the medical staff. That was sort of, you know, a whole different universe of performance. The Sydney to Surf run, you know, I sort of volunteered for that a few years. So in sort of control running things like that, you tend not to. So your question to me was, what's a classical? So in running sports, it's rolled ankles. Mm-hmm. In basketball, it is basically I suppose jammed fingers, because the ball sort of hits the tip of the finger and the tip of the finger bends, you know, so those are sort of jammed fingers. In contact sports, it's hip pointers, so people who are sort of rubbing up against each other, the side of the hip, there's sort of a prominent bone there called the iliac spine. They sort of hit or bruise the iliac spine and then they go, look, I've got pain on my hip, is it coming from my back? Those are probably the common ones. Those would be the classical ones. You know, you'd say that you should, you know, if you've been on the field a couple of times, you know, the minute sort of the injury happens, you'd already be able to spot what it is. Mm. Anterior cruciate ligament tears, that's a very interesting one. You know, we're seeing much fewer ACL injuries now. And I think that's largely got to do with improved understanding of what causes an ACL injury, what you can do to prevent it. But yeah, I mean, those are still sort of really very common. Very common and classical kind of things that happen on the field.
All right. We have a caller on the line, Johnny. I don't think it's related to our topic, but I think I'm just going to take it anyway. Seems like an interesting one. Hi, Johnny. You have a question for us.
Hi. Thank you for taking me my call. Hi, Dr. Rajesh.
Hi, Johnny.
So I'm 60 years old and entries on this Tai Chi. You know, every day I play for about 30 minutes. You know, recently, maybe because of the COVID, I take about 1 month off, then I start again. You know, I started about already 1 month. So on and off, I can feel my knees, you know. There's the pain on the knees. You know, I think it might be old age, but I try to do a lot of warm-up before I do the actual Tai Chi. You think, is it serious, or I should just rest more or put any ointment or go for an orthopedic for an X-ray? Thanks, Dr. Rajesh.
Thank you, Johnny.
Okay, so Johnny, let's try and look at that question in as sophisticated manner as we can. You had a level of performance, a level of activity, and then that level of activity stopped, and then you've resumed. So if you go back to the start of this conversation and talk about the wear-tear repair cycle, so your wear-tear repair cycle has sort of come down. So your ability to sort of repair from things has come down. And so when you have wear and tear, you can't keep up with the repair. So that's sort of, take that as a simple first step, as it were. Now, the question of what do you do about it, if you're doing Tai Chi and are just doing the exact same thing that you did before, it's unlikely to be an injury. So when you talk about old age, you know, old age is a very nebulous concept. And it's something that I would rather not entertain by itself, but I'd rather entertain in context. You know, when I was training as a junior doctor, we were still writing cause of death as old age on people's certificates. Now, you know, calendars don't cause death. A failure of an organ causes death. So sort of this move to its old age, I think, should go away. And it should really be more, what's the underlying tissue that's causing your pain? And I think that's sort of a very reasonable question that you should ask. So if you talk about imaging modalities for you, I get the impression that from what you've described, the underlying tissue that's causing the pain is unlikely to be bone. So for me, an X-ray is unlikely to be the first line of investigation if I were to see you. If you'd say, well, what are the choices? The choice would either be an MRI or an ultrasound, depending on sort of who you had access to in terms of what services were available. But, you know, not after a sophisticated physical examination. Somebody would have to be able to examine you and look at you and say, well, on a balance of probability, this problem is going to come from a tendon, a meniscus, the cartilage surface, you know, a pinched nerve, whatever. And only then have this sort of direction for imaging, you know. And I think, Shawik, this is probably a good juncture to sort of dispel the myth that there's one best imaging modality, right? It's always, if you want to take a picture of a sunset, it's different to if you want to take a picture of a flower close up. It's different if you want to take a family portrait. It's different if, you know, you want to take some sort of other picture. So every picture that you want to compose requires specific settings and sometimes specific filters. And so that's really the way to think about imaging. You can't just go say, well, I'm going to get a picture of the outdoors. Sure, you may get a picture of the outdoors, but you're not going to capture, you know, the bird on the tree, you know, or the flower on the bush or whatever it is. You sort of get this general picture. So you really have to be a little bit selective when you're talking about imaging. There is no one best imaging. And getting a general photo outside just gives you, you know, a view outside. It may not show you what you want to see.
Yeah, and definitely you have said many times before, you know, your message is always not to just rely on something like an MRI or an X-ray to give you a diagnosis as such. We do have another call on the line, but we'll just go for a quick break. So, Selva, if you just stay on the line, we'll get back to your call after we come back. I'm speaking to consultant orthopedic surgeon Dr. Rajesh Singh. We're discussing what happens when injuries occur at the Olympics and the role of medical imaging. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik. My guest today, consultant, orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Rajesh Singh on Zoom with me. We're discussing injuries at the Tokyo Olympics and how medical imaging can play a role. Now, we have a caller on the line, so we'll just go to that call first. Good afternoon, Selva. You're on the line. You have a question.
Yes, good afternoon, Dr. Rajesh.
Hi, Selva. How can I help?
Hi. I am quite aware about this acute and chronic pain. All right, I want to know if my condition is whether it's a chronic pain. I've been doing this punching, you know, punching bags. And I have this pain in the inner elbow on both my hands. And the pain is persistent. I would like to know what is the condition and what kind of treatment can I go for. That's all. Thank you.
Dr. Rajesh, did you have anything you'd like to clear with
Selva? Selva, do you smoke cigarettes?
Hello?
Selva, do you smoke cigarettes?
No, I don't.
Okay, and how old are you now?
I am 54 now.
54 now, and how long have you been punching for? How many years have you been punching for?
I do this occasionally as just a workout for my cardio. Because I also have some knee problems where I can't go for jogging as I used to. So I do this just as a cardio exercise.
Just on and off? But how many years have you been doing it for?
Say close to about 1.5 years now.
All right.
And when did your pain come on?
Pain came on, I guess, when I started this exercise, exactly. Before that, I don't used to have this pain.
All right. Okay. Thank you so much, Selva. We'll answer your call we'll answer your question on the air.
Okay, Selva. So let's sort of try and frame the problem correctly, right? So your question of acute or chronic pain is not the correct frame here, because acute or chronic pain you would consider in the absence of a clear provocation, whereas in you there's a clear provocation, which is a year ago you started punching, or 18 months ago you started punching and the pain came on. So really the question that you should be asking is, what is the process that's causing the pain? Well, the activity that's causing the pain is clearly punching. But what is the process behind the activity that's causing the pain? So that's the thing that you sort of, you have to look at a little bit. I would say that pain on the inner aspect of the elbow in a 50-something-year-old with punching that persists would probably need to be assessed, because you, I would expect the pain to be there while you're punching and maybe a little bit after, a little bit, meaning, you know, a few hours that day, and then the next day I expect it to go away. So your question to me was, what could it be? My approach would be to assess on the local area and firstly look at your punching technique and look at the biomechanics and say, you know, is there clearly some biomechanical issue going on? The second thing I would look at is I would look at the power supplying sort of the muscles that cross the elbow joint. I'd look at, you know, the power of biceps, triceps, as well as sort of your wrist and finger flexors to see whether there is adequate power across the muscles that support the joint. So I'm trying to assess, is the joint being overloaded or is some other soft tissue structure being overloaded? And then I'd complete that with a neurological examination to see whether this is a referred pain coming from somewhere else, i.e., you know, when you punch, are you pinching a nerve in your neck and you're feeling the pain in your elbow, for example. So that would probably be the way I approach it. But again, you know, this question just serves to highlight you... For you, going and getting an x-ray without having a proper history and diagnosis is meaningless, right? Because whatever your x-ray shows, I mean, it just shows what it is. Whether it's causal or an association is something that's yet to be established. So that's the thing that you want to sort of really be a little bit mindful about when you're trying to get to a diagnosis. You know, I have lots of people who come to me with well-meaning images having been taken, you know, usually as part of some sort of screening thing. I think screening is great. I think that screening in healthcare has a very important and significant role. But, you know, it has to be understood in what it is. You know, it's a screening kind of investigation. So you would say, well, on screening, initial screening, I find A, B, or C. And so consequent to that, given the circumstances that the patient has, you know, I'll follow up with investigation D, E, or F, or, you know, modality of treatment or whatever it is. But the this idea that imaging tells us the truth is not true. I think that, and that stands for the Olympics as well. The thing about the Olympics is the question's really very straightforward. So, you know, sort of when the question is set, then the image tells us the truth. So say, for example, I had a lady who stubbed a toe in the middle of the night. The toe is really painful. I saw in clinic today. It's bruised blue and black. And so the question is, actually, her question is it broken? My statement was, well, even if it is, it doesn't matter. It's going to heal off its own accord. Then because the position looks good, everything looks good, then the question was, how long is it going to take to heal? So that's where the x-ray came in handy, because if it's a broken bone, I'll tell you it's going to take 6 weeks. If it's some torn soft tissue, more likely in the order of 2 weeks. And for this particular lady, it was important for her to know how long it was going to take to heal so that she could plan her life. So in that sense, the image gave us an answer, a black and white answer to say, this is going to take 6 weeks to heal. But it's because the question is framed correctly. So a lot of the time when imaging is done, the question is framed poorly. So if you have a poorly framed question, you get poor quality information.
So in the Olympics, the question is going to be, can I get back on the field and when can I do that, right?
No, I think the question in the Olympics is usually a little bit more specific. Or, you know, sports questions are usually a little bit more specific based on the particular requirements. So say, for example, what I've been involved in gymnastics, hockey. Okay, so let's take hockey for an example. The player is playing and has had a finger injury and the finger's clearly broken, right? But the player says they want to play and coach says, coach wants them to play. So the question there is, if they continue playing, will this fracture come to harm and will the person come to harm? So that's really the question. So you really need that sort of clinical lens, as it were, to focus it. So in that particular situation, I looked at it and I said, yes, it's going to come to harm. Then the next question is that harm fixable after the game? And in this particular instance, it was a recoverable harm. So I said, yes, this finger will come to harm, but you know, I can fix it within 2 weeks. So they go ahead, they, you know, they went ahead, they completed the game, they won, they're very happy, and then she came off and she had an operation later. So it's really the, I look at the clinical question as the lens that you put onto your camera. You may have a very powerful camera, but with the wrong lens, you're not going to see what you want to see.
So I, you know, you've talked about having volunteered at the 2000 Sydney Olympics. What is it actually like, you know, when it's happening? You know, are the scans needed immediately? How do the radiologists then work with the team? You know, what is it like?
Okay, so it's basically like being part of a military operation. So, you know, you have, there's a chain of command, and there's an upline and downline, and you just need to make sure that you understand what your place in the chain of command is. And, you know, my role at the time, I think it was a 2000, second year graduate. So my role was basically to take people. So injured people will be assessed by the first liners, who may be like, you know, paramedics, physios, whatever. Then they would sort of do the first line assessment. And if it's relevant, bring it up to me. And then I would do the second line assessment. And then if relevant, I would send it up for further imaging. So on the ground, there's really not a lot of leeway for you to sort of think or be imaginative. You're just, you're a cog in a wheel in a very big machine. And, you know, if you understand what your role is, then basically things flow through very quickly. So there's sort of very, very clear set criteria and escalation. You know, it's not like this sort of TV drama, sort of high tension kind of situation. It's actually
which is what
very,
I was imagining.
Yeah, no, it's very, very pedestrian. It is really much, much more pedestrian. Maybe it's a lot like the vaccinations. You know, you walk into this, our massive vaccination center, then, you know, other than the fact that it's a lot of people waiting, it's just a process. So, you know, you go to station one, do this, station two, do this, station three, do this, station four, do that, you know, have your injection, you know, wait for 20 minutes and then go away. And, you know, it's just, it's a process. So the good thing about the Olympics is that they're very well managed, you know, it's sort of in terms of their logistics, they have the best of the best of the best of the best. You know, they have the best people and the best equipment and the best venues with the best circumstances. So you're really for want of nothing. Mm. The rare conflict comes when there's a divergence between what is clinically indicated and what somebody wants, you know. So some precious athlete may say, I want an MRI scan when, you know, clearly there's not much going on with them. And that's usually where the conflict comes, where it's sort of personal desire versus medical indication. But other than that, you know, being on the ground is just a huge logistics exercise. You know, make sure you know where the toilets are, make sure you hydrate properly, make sure you have something to eat, make sure you have some sweets, because you don't know when you're going to rest next.
Advice to live by. have you had a chance to work with Paralympic athletes? I'm just wondering about the imaging of Paralympic athletes. What would be some unique issues there?
Okay, so I haven't done a Paralympic athletic event, but I have worked in rehabilitation hospitals. I've worked in rehabilitation sort of facilities. The imaging is just a lot more sophisticated, you know. So if you have an athlete, if you have a special needs, I think we sort of, the correct way to look at this is special needs. And I'll tell you the story, which sort of very relevant. I saw a young deaf mute who fell down and broke her wrist, and she was put in a cast. And she saw me at sort of, I don't know, maybe about the 5 to 6 week mark, being completely despondent, because what somebody had done was that basically done the equivalent of sewing your or my lips shut, right? So this lady communicates with her hands, correct, right? And now without thinking, the sign language, and without thinking, somebody just put her in a cast. Mm. You know, they didn't consider any other treatment alternative because this is a deaf mute who used their hands to sign. So that to me is a tragedy, right? So if you talk to me, if you see, you know, imaging in the Paralympics or special circumstances, I think it's really sort of working out how this person is differently able. Like, how do they do the things that we would do in a different way? And trying to make sure that those bases are covered in terms of imaging. Because, you know, I can imagine if you have, or well, I mean, I have a patient who is in a wheelchair, but skis. So that's crazy. You know, he's in a wheelchair, but, you know, he does skiing. That's sort of his sport. And this individual is very foolish because the stress on his body means that he's damaging and destroying his shoulders. And I said to him, dude, you don't have legs. You can't ski. You're skiing your shoulders. You're destroying your shoulders. And he's unable to accept the fact that his body has limits, and when he pushes beyond the limits, it damages the body, right? So that's probably the reversal of, you know, the doctor's view that you can't see the disability beyond you. Here, the person can't see their own limits. So it's a two-way conversation.
All right. Well, we're running out of time. Do you have a final message for us today?
Yeah, I think it is, you know, talk about imaging in the Olympics, I'd say that, you know, other than the fact that we do a lot of it in a very structured manner, the rules for imaging still apply, which is make sure that you've got the correct lens on your camera, make sure that you've got a good thorough physical examination, make sure that you've got a very defined, focused clinical question that needs to be answered, and then understand whether the imaging will tell you yes, no, or maybe. And what are you planning to do if it's yes? What are you planning to do if it's no? And what are you planning to do if it's maybe? And that way you can make sort of a values-based assessment as to, you know, how you want to travel through the healthcare system.
All right. Thank you so much. I've been speaking to Dr. Rajesh Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.